It's all about performance. Consistent. Reliable. Delivering results. With a focus on well-being. To keep you ahead and on top of your game. And at the heart of it all, there has to be trust. Performance. Well-being. Trust. The values key to the success of Hoover, principal club sponsor of Warrington Wolves. Values also embraced by The Wire, which is why, together, we make the perfect team. Hoover and Warrington Wolves. Packs more performance. Discover more at hoover.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the Through the Wire podcast. I'm your host, Liam Brown, and I'm pleased to welcome you on board for our first episode. The idea behind this is very simple. It's a rugby league podcast that isn't about rugby league. It's about people and who those people really are when they take off the primrose and blue jersey. Today's interview was with Jake Mamo, a player who showed incredible honesty in this interview, giving us the opportunity to find out a little bit more about Jake and to find out how people's perceptions of him might differ a little from reality, how he deals with tough times, and why maintaining his individuality in a team environment is very important to him. It's a very interesting interview, so let's get into it. When you talk about personalities in the game, there aren't many more with bigger personalities than our first guest, the chairman of the PRC himself, Jake Mamo.
Hello, hello. Happy to be here.
Jake, firstly, I want to know what the PRC is and what's it all about.
Yeah, well, whatever I want to know about. Basically, it started as a bit of a complete joke. There's a group of, I said four after the game, but there's actually six or seven of us. I won't bother naming them now, but most people know who they are. We hang out a bit at training. You know, you've got different kind of cliquey groups in training, and that's kind of developed as our one over the last two or three years. And we kind of support each other in ways that when other people are kind of taking the mickey out of us or one of us, we'll kind of get on the back and support them. So then we got nicknamed the Positive Reinforcement Crew by one of the staff members. So we just kind of ran with that. And then again, I mentioned it in the interview as just a bit of a joke to make everyone laugh a little bit. So that's how it came about.
Yeah, that was a fantastic interview. It was very, very high after that game as well. You just scored your hat trick.
Yeah, exactly. I've looked it back and I feel like I come across as a bit manic, which I suppose it's hard not to after you've just played a game. It's hard to get your words out correctly.
It's hard to score a hat trick unless you're manic, isn't it?
Yeah, to be honest, I said after that game as well, I didn't actually do much in that game. The ball landed in my hands a few times, so I kind of got lucky.
Fantastic. So you know him for being such a positive, happy bloke. Is that a true reflection of you? Is it just a sort of side you see? Because I think one of the ideas behind this podcast is we want to get away from the sort of people you see, the interviews you see straight after a game. So that obviously what we see of you straight after a game, especially after a victory, is very, very high, very happy, very positive, a lot of love for the fans and the crowd and what you've just done. Is that a true reflection of who you are, do you think?
So I definitely try to be, but I couldn't honestly say that it's a true reflection of me all the time. And I think it's important, definitely. But I do find it difficult at times. I think, like you said, the only time that the fans, well, that the wider fans will see me on TV is after a win and I've done something good. They won't give me an interview after I've been shit, will they? And I suppose there's other times when if it's after a game, I'm going over to the fans, I'm connecting with them, which I really, really love. And that's a happy time. I'm not going to be unhappy in those moments. But I definitely do find myself a lot of the time, and I have since I've been young. My mum would say to me all the time that I kind of had a negative outlook. And it's something that I've had to kind of try and change in my life. And I still haven't figured it out. There's honestly half the week where I'm really not enjoying myself, not whether that's rugby, whether that's I'm just not feeling happy or confident in how I'm progressing in life that week. It doesn't come easy. Something I'm still working on and something I'm, I don't know, trying to figure out, I suppose.
Yeah, some people sort of tend one way or the other, don't they? Some people tend to look on the bright side. Some people have a bit more when something goes wrong. The first natural thought is more on the negative side. I think probably I'm one of those people, and it's something you have to really work on, isn't it, to catch yourself, I think, a little bit, especially in sport.
Definitely, like I feel the same way. And why that's the case, I don't know. Like, there, maybe it's just genetic. It's could be hereditary, could be a chemical imbalance in some people that pushes them in to be more positive, or that just to be their initial outlook or the way they were brought up. And for other people, it goes the other way. I'll say that it depends on like how things are going in my life as well, as to whether I can go 6 months where I'm feeling really happy and great about things, and like I would say that I am kind of super positive, and when things aren't going my way, I can just kind of brush them aside or look at the positive. But if I've been having a bad month as well, it can just, everything kind of seems too much, and I can walk around kicking stones and thinking that every little thing that happens that I don't quite agree with, that I've just got this negative outlook and hate everything.
Yeah. Is there any way you deal with that? Have you found something that works for dealing with it? You know, some people would suggest meditation, some people suggest going on holiday, some suggest maybe calling your mum.
Yeah, so there are little things that I've figured out that help, but probably what I find difficult is that I don't stick to them. So you've mentioned meditation there. I've gone through several different periods where I will meditate for a couple of weeks and then not for a couple of months, or I'll do it for a month and then not for a little bit.
I've got a Headspace subscription that I've probably used about 10 times
exactly.
in the 3 years.
Great, you have great intentions, but then you kind of fall away from it. So your question was, I suppose, ways to deal with it. I think
the reason I'm asking that is that there'll be a young person watching, or even an older person, really, that's dealing with the same thing, and obviously you're in a high pressure situation that more high pressure than a lot of people are in their everyday lives. I'm wondering if you've probably got a little bit more insight into what works in that.
Yeah,
I have
my own insights. I don't know if it's a little bit more, but they're kind of simple things, and it takes me a little bit to remember what they are. But like, if I'm having a tough time, I'll go into my shell a bit, and like you said, you mentioned call your mum before. I won't do that. I won't answer calls. Mm. I won't answer my mates' calls, or I won't reply to their messages for, it'll start with 2 days, and then 2 months later I haven't replied to them. I think, shit, have I just lost a mate because I've just ignored them? And then that kind of, it gets me into a downward spiral. So honestly, it can be the simple things, whether it's replying to people that are my good friends or family, or making an effort to go see people. Like, sometimes you'll go months without seeing friends that you kind of really value as really good friends, and then that kind of gets me into this downward spiral. So it's simple things like that, keeping connected with people, getting out. It's things as simple as like reading a book helps for me, and I'll go months without reading, and then I'll read 5 pages one day and I'll go, oh, that made me feel a lot better about myself. It doesn't matter what the book is, it's just doing something than other than whether you finish training, you go home and sit in my room, or just getting to, so yeah, there's a couple of little things, but I don't have any major breakthroughs. Like I said, still things I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah. And would you say you've always been a little bit that way? Or was it more?
Yeah, definitely. My whole life I've just really been up and down. Like you said, you said that I maybe outwardly seem positive, which I think I am probably most of the time to other people, but in my own company, I've always been very up and down. And hopefully one day I can figure out a balance to just have more ups than downs.
So what was you like as a kid?
What was I like as a kid? It's a tough one, so I've got to think back. I'll classify me as a kid going up till 22 before I moved to Huddersfield, because I still lived at home until then. I think as a younger child, I was quite a bit, say like up from 0 to 13, that like before high school, I think I was a bit of a mental kid, a bit crazy. Like, I started walking very early. I was climbing fences at like a year old, and mom had to teach me how to swim because I was climbing my grandparents' pool fence apparently. And I always kind of like rode motorbikes, push bikes, crash all the time, have stitches, and just kind of like, oh, not getting into trouble, but just getting into, I don't know,
an inquisitive child.
Yeah, just maybe scaring my mum a little bit and my grandparents. And then through my teenage years, I think that really kind of worked against me, because I didn't really grow out of it. Teenager, wanted to have friends, but I think I pushed people away just by wanting to do stupid things all the time as a teenager. And I think some of my friends were a bit like, don't really want to hang out with him. So I kind of had to I had to figure that out for myself, that why didn't my friends want to hang out with me? That was the reason why. And then had to kind of make some change, not make some changes to my personality, but just kind of rein in a little bit and just be like, oh, that's kind of a silly thing to do. Why do you even want to do that? And
yeah,
it's kind of, so yeah, that was kind of me up until I was probably like 15, 16, 17. And then I started to calm down a little bit in a sense. And then, but then that was about the time as well that I started, went into like a professional rugby kind of situation. And then that brings on its own new group of friends, different dynamic. So yeah, that's kind of.
Would you say that the sort of move over here really matured you? Because it's sort
it definitely
of sink or like, swim environment,
yeah,
isn't it?
Like I said, I lived at home until I was 22. And I thought I knew everything before that stage, but then moving to Huddersfield by myself, I moved by myself. But then you go into a team instantly with 30 other guys. So you've got friends, and I knew Rick Stone, the coach, as well, who's like kind of a good mentor for me and always been a really good friend. So I wasn't on my own in that sense, but I did have to, I learnt some things about myself. I started going out more and having more of a social life, which I never did when I was kind of in the NRL, just because I didn't think you could whilst you were playing professional sport. And then I learned you could, and you kind of have more fun whilst doing it. So I learnt that. What else? I built better relationships here than I probably ever did in Australia. And like I said, that was probably down to myself and just kind of pushing people away a little bit. So that was one of the big things, and like why I've stayed here for so long, and I do plan on staying for probably the majority of my life, is that I've just felt like I found my place here a little bit more. And that's probably more situational rather than, like, I like to tell people that I like the UK more than Australia, but that's just my personal experience.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not necessarily
everybody's experience.
Yeah, it's not everybody's experience.
There's a lot of English people that disagree with you.
Exactly. That's the conversation I have all the time. People ask me, why am I here and why would I want to stay here? Well, yeah, that's the reason.
Not sitting up on the beach. So did you find that the way you was as a teenager affected how you advanced in the game? Do you think that maybe that immaturity in those teenage years probably cost you a little bit?
So I don't actually. I think in my teenage years it probably helped me, because it kind of, I didn't have friends, so I wasn't really going out drinking like most teenage people are. And maybe if I had discovered that younger, that I wouldn't have kind of trained as hard and got to the position that I have been in. I don't really think that affected my playing that much. I do look back and think of like, oh, have I become the player that I thought I would be or wanted to be? And there's probably some things I could have done differently, but I've always trained hard. I've always focused a lot. In hindsight, I probably should have focused on some other things and like developing other areas of my game, but I don't have kind of regrets about it, because again, maybe I wouldn't have come here. I wouldn't have ended up in the UK and where I want to be. The only thing I could have done is maybe made more money by playing better and staying in the NRL, getting paid a shitload, but to be honest, I don't care that much about that.
Yeah. Would you say, what was your biggest failure and what did you learn from it? I think everybody's always got that story of when they really messed it up. I know players coming into this club, Carl likes to see that they've faced a bit of adversity, and he always sees that as a positive thing because they've learned how to overcome it. Have you got a moment like that that sticks out for you?
So I don't think I do. I've had thought about this because obviously I thought this question was coming, but I don't think there's like one big failure. There's, like I said, maybe some things in my life that I could have done differently, but I am pretty happy with where I am, like in life, pretty happy with where I live, who my friends are. So like I could say we're looking at in a rugby aspect, like probably my last year at Huddersfield, I didn't play well, mentally wasn't in a good position. So that kind of, I thought I had kind of thrown away my career a little bit, just because I had got offered a decent contract from Huddersfield and I said no to that because I wasn't sure I wanted to stay and then end up coming here on less than half the money. And in that sense, I thought, oh, maybe this is the end of my rugby career. So that kind of made me possibly think about rugby a bit differently. or not even rugby, but definitely it kind of pushed me to think, okay, this might be the end of my rugby career. I've got to start thinking about something else now. Other failures. I left, like, not a failure, but I left school when I was 17. Didn't finish just because, like, honestly, I just couldn't be asked going to school. I did go back and finish school, just did, like, a foundation year at uni. But I probably should have stuck that out a little bit more. And, again, I started uni, quit uni, because, again, couldn't be asked. But I kind of should have kept doing that, I think.
You regret not doing it.
I regret not doing that, yeah.
Do you think, what are your plans for after you retire? Is that something you think about? Or?
Yeah, it's what I think about every single day. It's a hard game, and luckily I'm playing reasonably well at the moment, but there's been times when I haven't been playing well, and I've thought, well, this is going to end soon, so I've got to figure out what I've got to do. And even now, like, I'm enjoying playing well, but then when you have a bad game, you just get into this spiral of, like, I hate this, I want to quit. So, yeah, I know there's going to come a stage soon when I need to stop playing. And to be honest, I don't think I won't play till I'm 35 or 34. It's just very, very unlikely. I think being smaller than everyone else, my body can't handle it. Obviously, there's been a lot of issues with head injury in the last couple of years, and that really, really worries me. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of my time goes into worrying about what I will do. And this comes back to whether I'm feeling shit about myself during a week or not. It's because I think, well, rugby's not going to last forever. I should be doing something productive right now, but I'm not. I'm, I don't know, wasting my time doing something else. So, yeah, anyway, back to the question. When I do try and figure it out, I think, like, to be honest, I've just bought a house and I'm completely renovating it now and doing it up and really enjoying doing the interiors on that. And for a long time, like, I've had a massive interest in interior design and architecture. And
wow.
If I could go back, I would have told myself to be an architect, but I don't think I can face a 7-year degree now at 27 years old. It just won't happen. But there are some quicker avenues into interior design. So right now, that's what I'd kind of like to focus on. And I have, like, great interest in business as well. And I know it's very easy to just say, oh, I'm going to be a businessman. And that's not exactly the case. But I do like to learn about it. I like to speak to people. I do like to think one day that I could run my own business, and whether that's an interior design firm or I don't know, but yeah, I think that would be something that I'd be interested in. But
it's really, really interesting that you've chosen those two sort of career paths, a businessman or interior design. They're both sort of creative ways of expressing yourself. Do you find you're quite a creative person like that? Or is there any other things that you like doing that are quite creative?
So I'd like to think I'm a little bit creative. I definitely want to be, but I don't know if I am as such. Yeah.
Do you get the chance to express that much in rugby? Pricey doesn't like you being creative with his set plays and things like
exactly,
that.
Yeah. No, so I think one issue that I've had with rugby over the past, 10, 9 years that I've been professional, I think it's difficult at times to be an individual. I think you come into a team, there's obviously it's all men, there's a lot of toxic masculinity, and it's difficult to kind of be an individual. Like, it's put down a lot, it's kind of banter, but it's often kind of individuality can be suppressed a little bit, and it can be quite, I don't know, a bit soul destroying at times. And I think it's been difficult for me, and I know for other people and some of my other friends, that to kind of like find a way to still be yourself in a team sport like this, that it's so laser focused, you've really got to concentrate on it, which we all do, but then, so trying to do that, focus on that and do that right, whilst also having a balanced life, doing what you want, having to shake off the kind of negative, unsupportive comments that come from your peers, which they maybe don't realise it's so kind of influential. And maybe some people are good at shaking it off, but there's definitely been players I've seen that kind of just get, and myself for sure, just beat down by the constant kind of like supposed banter with my fingers up. I definitely found that difficult to overcome in rugby. And I think I probably have in the last couple of years. I definitely didn't in the first few years of my career. I found that really hard. But again, I think moving over here, as it's not such a, you're not in the media and it's not so, there's not that much of a spotlight as there is in Australia, that's part of the reason why I've enjoyed myself more over here and learnt to be a bit more myself. And
Do you see yourself as different to most of your teammates or different to the sort of stereotypical rugby player? Is that sort of self-image you have of yourself?
Yeah, I definitely do, and I like to think so. But again, in saying that, part of me is just a stereotypical rugby player because, I don't know, it's hard not to be. This is what I do. It is my identity at the moment. And that's one of the things I find difficult because being a rugby player is my identity, and I like to try and pull myself away from that, but it's really hard to. And like we've spoken about doing stuff after rugby, even when you're kind of not playing or you don't get picked or something, you feel absolutely shit about yourself because, well, that's your identity and that's what you're supposed to be good at. And then, like, I've had plenty of times over the last 2 years when I wasn't picked, and then, well, you think, well, fuck, I'm not good at this. So you think, well, I'm not good at this. What am I good at? And yeah, so yeah.
So do you think that, you know, to express yourself like that, it takes quite a bit of confidence? I think sometimes people see confidence as being like kind of going into a room and thinking, oh, they'll all like me, when really it's a bit more, well, I'll be okay if they don't. And I think, is that something that's been part of your journey, just being comfortable and expressing
yourself?
Yeah, definitely.
When this question of confidence comes up, in, it's always, I don't know, it comes up in different conversations and whatnot, it's not black or white confidence. And because I can say that I think I'm, like, really confident in some areas of my life and things that I am good at, but there's other areas where I just feel like I'm the least confident person in the world. Like, I just, yeah, so I think that's it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one to, like, understand. Mm. What was your question exactly?
Do you think it's down to confidence? So as you've become older, do you think you've become more confident in expressing yourself? And that's because you're not really as focused on whether people are going to like you, and it's more about just you being you?
Yeah, so again, so I have got better at expressing myself, and that does come down to confidence in those situations. But like you did mention, confidence isn't exactly, oh, they will all like me as well. If they don't like me, does that matter? Am I staying true to myself? What are my core beliefs? Am I comfortable? So yeah, I think, yeah, that's probably the main way I look at it. Yeah.
Okay. Away from the game, what kind of things are you into? What's a perfect rest day for you?
I mentioned it earlier. I got a lot of interest, but I find it difficult to, like, well, I just move on from interest to interest. And so let's say perfect rest day, it's probably very simple. I'm just going to get up, go get some nice food from a cafe. I live in Didsbury, have a coffee, and then go for a walk in the peaks or something, or maybe go to the Dales for a swim. Ideally, that will be the ideal rest day if the weather's good. Or even if the weather's not good, would maybe give it a go.
Seems it's quite a few outdoorsy types in the team. You know,
definitely.
Toby King's always seems to be doing a bit of wild swimming. Yeah,
paddleboarding in Windermere or something. Yeah, so that's again the group that is affectionately known as the PRC. We've done quite a bit of swimming, and it probably started in lockdown last year when we were finally let out. And everyone had a little bit more time, and it carried on from the end of summer last year throughout winter. We were going up to where, Gaddings Dam or Kirby Lonsdale in the river there. Even did we go to the lakes a few times? I think we did, and swimming throughout the winter. It's good that everyone's kind of got into that a little bit more, and that's one of, like, the great things that I like doing.
I think that's been the main benefit of lockdown. It's forced people to go and sort of explore the local areas or go a little bit further afield and see some of the natural beauty. I think a lot of people don't realise how beautiful a country we live in sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I completely agree with that. Sometimes it's a bit irritating because some of the more popular spots are overcrowded now, but then you just got to go a bit more out of your way to find some more quiet spots. But I've sent some photos to my family of the Lake District over the last couple of weeks, and they're kind of shocked that that's in the UK. And to be honest, I had no idea that existed before I moved here. But yeah, there's just so many places that are really not that far away where you can go swimming. It's beautiful scenery. Yeah,
being in nature as well calmed you down.
Exactly. Yeah, it does. It does. It's probably being in nature and kind of by yourself, taking a little bit of time to think and breathe. It's definitely helps calm the mind, I suppose.
So you've been here a number of years now. What do you think are the big differences between here and Australia?
I've been asked this question several times, and there's quite a lot of differences which I didn't think would be the case. And when I moved here, I kind of thought probably culturally pretty similar, which generally they might be as such. But probably the biggest thing I found when I moved here was I just found like that the young men, they were the boys that I was mates with at Huddersfield, they were kind of a lot more like, I'll say like emotionally intelligent and just kind of spoke about their feelings more. I made closer relationships with people that I kind of didn't feel like I did in Australia. Obviously, the Yorkshire people are lovely, as are the people in, where are we now, Cheshire?
Got to get that in.
Yeah, but that was just my first experience, and very honest people, genuine, and kind of made me feel at home. So that was a kind of on a deeper level, but then on a little bit more shallow level, you can, on a night out here, and the kind of drinking culture is a lot more chilled. In Australia, if you speak too loudly in a pub, you'll probably get kicked out. But here, you can kind of have fun. You can drink in the park. You can get the train from Manchester to Liverpool and have a beer on the train. And I just kind of I enjoy the social aspect of my life here as well. So that's kind of that. They're two of the things that I've really enjoyed, along with the countryside. And there's plenty of countryside in Australia, but I enjoyed the change here. It was. I get bored quite easily, so. The big change from like my 22 years in Australia to then moving here, moving out by myself, having a bit more of a social life, the English countryside being different to Australia's, the nightlife being completely different. That was they're the kind of things that made me want to stay.
Do you find you're somebody that gets bored easily, and you do need a change to sort of?
Yeah, definitely, and I think that's one of the things that's maybe happened. Partly happened with my rugby career, not completely. Like I spent a few years at Newcastle and then wasn't really wanted anymore, so came over here. And then I, again, spent a few years at Huddersfield, played crap, wasn't really wanted anymore, so moved to here. Now, I played here for a few years, wasn't exactly wanted anymore, so I've moved on to Cass. But although that wasn't exactly my decision in those times, I think it's been good for me because after about 2 or 3 years in any place, I get a bit restless and a bit bored. Like, and again, if we're speaking about interests and things I like obviously I mentioned the countryside there, but I have 1,000 different interests and things that I get really, really involved
in. Tell me, I'm really, really interested in here, because I wasn't like expecting you to say that you was really into interior design.
Like I said, and I'm into interior design now, but I might change my mind on that in a couple of weeks. Like, so I studied mechatronic engineering at Newcastle University in Australia for a few months, and then I decided I couldn't be bothered, so I quit that. Then at different times in my life, I've been really into photography. I've spent loads of money on cameras. I bought a new camera probably 6 months ago now, but then I used it 4 times and I'm probably having a bit of a tough time this year, and then I just went to my shelf, put the camera away and haven't really had it out since then. And I've probably done that with photography three or four times throughout since I was 18 years old. Spent different times, again, months like learning guitar and doing it full on and then quitting. What else?
Do you think there's something in that, in that, you know, when you first start doing something, there's a very steep learning curve. So once you started to learn the basics, you can get really good really quickly. And so you're a little bit like perhaps weightlifting or fitness, and then you reach a plateau where you stop advancing as quickly. Do you think that's probably the point where you do it?
It could be. And to be honest, that I hope this is something I've wondered about myself with things like that, because I think, well, does that just mean that I'm lazy, or like that I'm a little bit, I was going to use the word weak, but I don't want to use the word weak.
Persistence.
Yeah, but I just don't have the drive to see anything through, and that kind of worries me a bit about myself. So I'm like, well, what's my life going to be if that's the case? But I don't really know. I would like to figure it out, and I would like to think that I'm not going to just quit everything that starts to get a little bit difficult throughout my whole life.
Yeah, but you've never done that with rugby league, so it's,
Yeah. To be honest, I think that is because they pay me, and there would have been 100% would have been some times that I would have quit but the fact that I knew I had to keep coming because I had to keep getting paid. So, unfortunately, but I think that is the reality of it. Fact that
it's an interesting comment. That do you think that? If I asked you, are you in love with rugby league? Is it something that you'd like to stay involved with after you retire, or are you one of those people that thinks that to a certain extent it's a job for you as much as you get pleasure out of doing it?
Yeah, it's a tough question, and like we've spoken about, there's weeks when I feel good and there's weeks when I feel bad, and the answer to this could very much depend on that. So I'll try and give an equal view from kind of both sides of me when I'm feeling that way. There are certainly times when I think, oh, this is just a job. I don't like it that much, and that's when I do worry about my welfare. I really get into this hole of, oh, I can't be myself here. There's festivals only in the next couple of weeks that I want to go to, but we've got games Friday then Monday of some of the best festival weekends of the English summer, and I just think, well, am I wasting my time here? Like, I'd rather do that. And I know it seems superficial that I'd maybe rather go to a festival than play rugby, but I don't think I've ever really had a childhood or like a teenage years, and many of us haven't. And again, is that superficial? Well, I don't think it is, because I just think they're important. They're important experiences that many of us haven't had. And yeah, there's the other side of it then that I do love, and I love playing every weekend. I don't like playing 4 days after 4 days in a row. I think that can sort out. But no, I do love playing. I love the fans. That's the best part about it for me. That's why I do a lap of the stadium and try and get as many photos as I can. And obviously at the moment we've got to be a little bit more distant, but I do love that side of it. I get gratification from being like feeling like I'm good at something, but again, if I've had a bad week, well then you just in the dump, you don't get that side of it, do you? Mm-hmm. So they're definitely both sides. And like I said, I won't play forever, but I've got a lot out of it, and that is friends, the fans that I've made, and like the messages that you get from them. It is good. The relationships I've made with fans, although they might only be fleeting. It is something special and that I do enjoy. But yeah, there's definitely both sides of it.
Yeah. And do you see yourself continuing in the game at all? In any sort of ways, coaching a kids team? I don't know, you know, being involved in a club?
I don't know. I think I'd maybe need some time out just to... Because it is very involved, whether that's...
It's very intense.
Yeah, coaches, players. Like, even you talk about, like, look at the coaching staff here. They might have played for 15 years and they've coached for 10 years. They haven't had a summer holiday in 25 years, and now I just think, well, what kind of life's that? So yeah, I probably won't ever be a coach, because to be honest, I don't know enough about rugby. I can kind of run fast and that's about it. but yeah, maybe in some capacity. I'd like to educate people in like my experiences and kind of like try and develop people, or like help develop people and help them to like be individuals. And like I said, it's hard to be, and it's kind of been perpetuated for years of this kind of like, you've got to be a man, and what does being a man really mean? Mm. Like, it kind of gets thrown around a lot, and I just don't think it's...
Break that dressing room macho.
Yeah,
culture.
I don't think there's much value in that word, or in that kind of, in that mindset, in that thinking. But yeah, I think like education's a big thing as well, which again, I'd like to help out in that way, in some way. Not that I'm probably in any position to educate people just yet, but maybe I could learn to. And whether that's, like I said, developing as young people, how you treat others financially, I think that's really important with young men and come into rugby and then, I don't know, spunk all their money. But yeah, and kind of like, yeah. And we do it in little bits, and there is education and people are educated a bit, but it needs to be maybe a little bit more.
So Jake, are you a reader? What books do you read? You mentioned that you like reading a few pages of books.
Calm down earlier. Like I said, I'll probably go through 6 months where I read six or eight books, and then I'll go for 8 months where I don't pick up a book. And it varies a lot. I've read a bunch of biographies, whether that's from business people, Elon Musk, or who's the guy that, what's the Nike book?
The Shoe Dog.
Yeah, book. Shoe Dog, yeah. Or Jacinda Ardern's book. So a few biographies, which I really enjoy. A little bit of fiction, because I've just thought I should maybe try and read some fiction, or like fantasy, but again, usually not into that as much. I've read a few kind of naturist books.
Right. Naturist as in bathing naked or about nature?
A bit of both. I'd have to Google quickly what it's called. Basically, who's the guy? I forget. He's a famous English nature writer. Basically just writes about the four seasons on his farm in Herefordshire. Interesting book. One of my favourite books at the moment is, it's called At the Ponds, and it's like a selection of essays from like female authors that swim in the female bathing pond at Hampstead Heath.
Right.
And I just think there's some good stories with quite a diverse bunch of authors in there. It's pretty interesting, paints a good picture of swimming and nature. It's what I like. I like London as well. Would love to live in Hampstead at some stage.
Fantastic.
Not cheap, but yeah, so kind of a variety of different books.
See, I think a lot of people that knew you on a superficial, like we'd never met before this podcast, so I knew you on the superficial level of I've only seen you on the pitch, I've only seen you in a post-match interview. Do you think people would be surprised by some of the answers they've seen so far that you...
Maybe they will be, and I think that's all part of... Well, yeah, obviously they don't see enough, and... Well, how are they going to see? How are they going to know what I read? I'm not much of a story poster of the books I'm reading on Instagram, so I don't post that much on Instagram anyway.
People don't know. I think that's something that I've noticed, and probably you've noticed quite a bit as well, is that, you know, people want to be loved for who they appear to be. They want to post the coolest pictures. In fact, they don't actually just post, you know, this is the book I'm reading.
It's definitely. And I'm the same. I want to be seen as the coolest person as well, but so yeah, you can't knock people for that.
We'll find out how cool you are with this question. So if we're going on a road trip, me and you, what music are you putting on the stereo? What's on your Spotify playlist?
Again, huge variety, depends on the mood, but probably top of the list, I'm going to play Laura Marling. You right, might know who she is, other people might not. Let me open my Spotify very quickly. I'll give a quick answer. Ooh, we won't shoot that playlist.
Is that an embarrassing one?
No, it's not. I'll tell you. So if I think about my teenage years, it was very like kind of emo rock.
Yeah.
And again, I still love it.
I can see that. You just had the ponytail as well.
Definitely, I did. I love that, and I would still listen to that now. I love it. But again, like I said, there's Laura Marling in there, which is English acoustic folk.
Yeah.
Again, love that. That's at the top of my list. Whatever the mood is, a bit of kind of, what do they call it now? Jazz soul rap or jazz rap, whatever.
There's some good playlists like lo-fi beats and things like that on Spotify that are like similar sort of stuff. Lo-fi hip-hop, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's fantastic to chill out to. I'll tell you what we'll have to do is we'll have to get a Jake Mamo Spotify playlist published. We'll see, people can discover a lot of
journey.
You know, what's your favourite restaurant? Are you a cook? You know, what would you cook for me if I came around to yours?
So again, one of my favourite things, food. Probably eat out too much and spend too much money. Favourite restaurant? I have a favourite cuisine, probably Japanese. Right. Love Japanese food. There's actually a couple of good Japanese places in Didsbury.
Right.
All Asian food really is kind of my favourite food. I like to cook it quite a bit. I don't know if I'm any good.
You got to be very careful with raw fish as well.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a reasonable cook. I do enjoy cooking.
Yeah, if you miss the next game for an unexplained reason, that might be what it is. So going to end on this one. What's the best thing about being a Warrington Wolves player, and what are you going to miss when you go over to Cass next year?
So the best thing about being a Warrington Wolves player is probably two things. The mates that I've made here, it's been 3 years now, and made some really, really good friends, some of my best mates now. So that's a big part of what I'm going to miss. And although it's only an hour away, you do tend to, like we said earlier, tend to not keep in touch as much as you want to. Mm. And really, I've got to be better at that. So yeah, that's up to me. But that's one thing I'll miss. And the fans as well. They've always been great to me, even over the first 2 years when I wasn't really getting picked that much. Or was maybe being average in playing at times. They were always great to me. And then especially this year when I've been playing more and got to know them a little bit better. It's a bit sad that I've only kind of just broke into the team now and then built a relationship with them, and then we'll have to be leaving. But it's the business, that's the way it goes, and hopefully I've said to a few of them when I've been chatting that when they come back, I hope they cheer me rather than boo me. But we'll have a bit of fun with them anyway.
I'm sure they will. Jake Mamo, thank you very much.
No worries, thank you.
So thanks for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it. I think too often fans only see players when they're playing rugby or talking about rugby, and this podcast series aims to get under the skin of the Warrington Wolves players to find out who they are, what the passions are, and what makes them tick.
I think Jake Mamo was incredibly honest there. You got an insight into how being a Super League player is great, but it's not without its struggles either. Until next time, thank you.